This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Thursday, January 16th. So the Trump-Ukraine scandal now has so many bombshells dropping all at once that when Nancy Pelosi delivered the articles of impeachment to the Senate in wooden boxes, you know, this historic ceremonial thing around 5 o'clock yesterday, physically walking articles of impeachment from the House to the Senate for only the third time in U.S. history, that was not the most dramatic thing that happened last night. The most dramatic thing was the indicted Rudy Giuliani associate Lev Parnas going on TV and saying he was serving as a contact with the Ukrainian government, pushing for the announcement of a Biden investigation, specifically on behalf of the president.
It was all about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and also Rudy had a personal thing with the Manafort stuff, the Black Ledger. Mm-hmm. That was another thing that they were looking into, but it was never about corruption. It was strictly about the Burisma, which included Hunter Biden and Joe Biden.
Lev Parnas on Rachel Maddow's MSNBC show last night. He's also going on Anderson Cooper on CNN tonight. Parnas is under indictment for allegedly making an illegal $325,000 donation to a pro-Trump super PAC, among other campaign finance crimes. And Parnas coming forward from Trump's inner Ukraine circle, along with John Bolton saying he would testify if subpoenaed, puts more pressure on Republican senators to allow witnesses at the trial of Donald Trump. Parnas also released a trove of documentary evidence that's probably even more important than anything he says. We'll hear another clip of Parnas and talk about what happens next as the impeachment trial gets very real with a very special guest, David Gergen, who was a White House advisor to four presidents, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton. He is the founding director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard and senior political analyst for CNN. And if your TV memory goes back far enough, you may remember he held the conservative seat on the PBS NewsHour's Friday Politics segment in the 80s and 90s on the segment then called Gergen and Shields before David Brooks took that seat opposite liberal commentator Mark Shields, and it got rebranded as Shields and Brooks. David, it's so nice to have you with us again. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
Let's start with Lev Parnas. I thought we already knew that President Trump was asking Ukraine to announce a Biden investigation and that he, the president, was doing it. So is there anything new to your ear in the clip we just played?
I think there is something new, and that is their assertion has come for a long time from the White House. The president really wasn't at the center of all of this. It was being done by people around him, and he didn't, when he had made the call, he was actually did it in an innocent way to Zelensky. And so the resistance on the Republican side has basically argued, yes, some things happened, but it wasn't the president. Here in the documents, especially that are coming from Parnas, we have much stronger proof that the president did direct it, especially a letter that Rudy Giuliani sent to the president-elect of Ukraine requesting a meeting. And Giuliani in the letter said that he was asking to see the incoming president as a personal counsel to President Trump. And he was doing it importantly. He was doing it with the full knowledge and consent of the president. Parnas himself is obviously not necessarily a reliable figure, but the documents make it the strong case that what he's saying happens to be true.
I was really struck reading that document that you just referred to, the note from Giuliani to Zelensky, because when you look at the actual quotes in there, Giuliani saying he was representing Trump, quote, as a private citizen, not as president of the United States, and was acting with Trump's, quote, knowledge and consent. And that seems really big to me because Giuliani put in writing that Trump had an agenda for Zelensky that was in Trump's private interest. He said so directly, yes. Not in the interest of the United States.
Yeah, but he also did say he was coming as personal counsel. So he, you know, he was having it both ways, in effect. So, but anyway, I think what it all adds up to is that there is more evidence that's concrete that the president was directly involved with this, was directing the traffic, in effect. And that strengthens the case for witnesses. They may want Parnas, they may want others, they may need to talk to Bolton to see for his perspective on as this was unfolding, because he was quite obviously unhappy with aspects of it. But it almost feels as if we're going to have the trial for an impeached president before we really have all the facts.
Another Parnas document is a handwritten note to himself, also from last spring, that said, get Zelensky to announce that the Biden case will be investigated. And that note makes a distinction that Trump's EU ambassador, Gordon Sondland, also made in the hearings. It's not get Zelensky to investigate Biden. It's just get Zelensky to announce an investigation. Do you agree that that distinction matters?
It obviously is a little bit less of an ask to announce that the investigation is going underway as opposed to it is happening or whatever. But I don't find that the case hinges on whether it was an announcement versus launching the actual investigation itself. I think the point of the of this whole narrative is that there was pressure put on the Ukrainians to deliver, and in exchange for which they would get money. That was the quid pro quo. What is also interesting is it turns out the Ukrainians were asking for a quid pro quo. One of the guys who has a darker reputation was basically telling Giuliani and Parnas, I will give you stuff on Biden, on the Bidens, but you got to get rid of that woman who's your ambassador, Yovanovitch, and if you get rid of her, then we'll play ball on the Bidens.
Yeah,
that was interesting because that was to solve their internal issues in Ukraine. Our ambassador Yovanovitch, who a brave woman, whose life we now realize was might have been on the line, and had to endure a greater tax on her character and integrity. That in all of this. What we do have is more than one quid pro quo. We have a very what seems increasingly tawdry game going on. But the second story that Parnas is engaged in with is with an American guy named Hyde, lives in Connecticut, unknown figure in all of this until now. And they are talking about stalking or pursuing and chasing around the streets of Kiev the ambassador herself. They wanted to put gumshoes on her to trace her movements. And you can imagine, as she realized what was going on, that must have scared her. And then she got this strange demand from the State Department to catch the next plane out because her life, for security purposes.
Yeah, one text seemed to refer to Yovanovitch being surveilled by people working with Hyde. Hyde wrote, I guess, to Parnas, quote, they will let me know when she's on the move.
Yeah.
That's pretty creepy. And, you know, we have some breaking news about this just this morning. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I have not.
Ukraine has announced it will investigate whether Yovanovitch was under surveillance. So it seems to me we've got a big irony here as of this morning. For all of Trump's efforts to get Ukraine to announce a Biden investigation, they never have announced that, but have now announced an investigation of someone working ostensibly on behalf of Trump.
Yes, and I did understand this morning that the Ukrainians were also going to investigate the whole question of Burisma and what was going on there with the Russian hacking. It's only been recently we've come to believe and understand that the Russians were actually trying to get in and get the documents and the evidence out of Burisma, too. And you wonder, why in the devil were the Russians so interested in Burisma? And clearly they were looking for evidence that they could turn over to Trump and help him and win his favor.
If Ukraine wouldn't launch an investigation of the Bidens,
the Russians would.
Exactly. A big country next door who would be only too happy to oblige.
Right.
But given Ukraine's dependence on Trump administration funding still and goodwill in general still to help it stave off Russia, why do you think Ukraine would take the step of investigating Robert Hyde for going after Yovanovitch?
I don't know. This has gotten so complex, it's hard to read the motives of almost anyone. But I do know that there's enough evidence here to suggest that even in the last few weeks, a lot more evidence has come in on this whole case, which needs to be explored and considered by the Senate before they come to actual a vote on acquittal or non-acquittal.
One of Trump's main lines of defense is that asking for a Biden investigation was clean because the U.S. should be demanding corruption investigations where we spend foreign aid money. But listen to Lev Parnas last night on that.
It was all about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and also Rudy had a personal thing with the Manafort stuff, the Black Ledger. Mm-hmm. And that was another thing that they were looking into. But it was never about corruption. It was strictly about the Burisma, which included Hunter Biden and Joe Biden.
Again, Lev Parnas on Rachel Maddow last night. David, do you now expect this to be a centerpiece of the upcoming trial?
I think it'll be a significant part of the upcoming trial, and it should be. You and I probably agreed 2 weeks ago that this was going to be a trial that would regurgitate all the evidence that we saw in the House and heard in the House, and it was going to be repetitive and lack drama for that reason. But now we actually have new information and new leads and new rabbit holes, and it's going to make it a lot of what we're going to hear now, I think, is going to be fresh.
Yeah, and this idea that Parnas expressed in that clip, that the only alleged corruption Trump ever asked them to investigate was what involved the Bidens. So it was obviously just to help him. There was no concerted effort to get Ukraine to clean up its act.
Yes. Brian, let me just one cautionary note you and I have to come back to periodically, and that is we don't know whether Parnas is fully reliable. We don't know quite whose pay he may be in or who he's trying to help or for what reason. Is he trying to seek revenge? And he's obviously breaking with the White House. He's breaking. The Stonewall is cracking. That's why the documents are so important. It's not just a matter of witnesses. It's the documents underneath all of that. As Schiff said the other day, documents don't lie. When you have the kind of thing you just mentioned, the letter from Rudy Giuliani to Zelensky, that's a very credible, makes a very credible point that, in fact, Giuliani was acting at the behest of the president and did have his knowledge, and the president did have a knowledge of what was going on and consented to it.
And I agree, obviously, that the documentary evidence, because it comes from last spring before Parnas tried to turn state's witness in any way, is more credible. But his statement that we just played, saying all they cared about was the Bidens, not any kind of corruption in general, it is corroborated by other testimony, which makes it interesting. Like Gordon Sondland, Trump's ambassador to the EU, who acknowledged saying that thing to somebody in a restaurant in Kyiv, that all Trump cares about is the big stuff, the Bidens.
Yeah. That's a very good point. There's sometimes, and I've been in all of this, as often is in these kind of cases, there's sort of a rush to judgment, and we need to get all the pieces in front of us.
How big a deal do you think it was that Parnas implicated Mike Pence and Attorney General Barr last night as being in on everything?
Well, that's one reason I think we have to be very, very cautious about it, what exactly we believe. Of course, they'll be angry about that. But I think before people reach and jump to conclusions on that, because Barr has already become a very controversial figure, the vice president less so. But in fairness to them, I think we have to wait for enough evidence to be more suspicious than based on Parnas tossing something off. Another thing, Brian, that is just coming out of left field, I had never really thought about, and I don't think it's gotten much attention, is that as viewers, are we actually going to have a good way to watch these proceedings and make judgments as American people making judgments and voters making judgments that may be relevant for next year? The way the rules are being drawn up is that there's going to be sort of limited camera agility. You can't move the cameras around. You can't really show it. It's going to be like, the old days when they put a camera in the House of Representatives, when Newt Gingrich and people did like that, and you saw you only saw the people talking. You never realized they were in an empty chamber. The way the cameras were presented. So,
in other words, there would just be a wide shot from afar, and so you couldn't focus on people's faces and have all the drama of that as a viewer?
What I've read so far suggests that's the case, and that it's going to be hard for these senators. They have to give up their iPhones, they have to give up their iPads, all their electronics have to be turned off and stored somewhere else, and they can't speak. and they can't talk to each other.
It would be another
how impossible that's going to be for a lot of these guys.
I know. That's going to be hard for them.
Yeah.
Maybe everybody should give up their cell phones for 5 hours a day, and the world would be a better place.
Well, I think that's probably right. Marianne Williamson arrives.
That's right. I think it's 5 hours, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Is that going to be the...
I think so. I don't know how... You know, it's going to be a long process, but... Brian, you and I both have grown up in a world where you sort of expect to have cameras.
Yes.
You know, any place where drama, especially public drama or drama in the public square, is taking place. So you can make an assessment of, you know, do these people look credible? Are they laughing on the side at what's being said? You need to have. I'm going to be disappointed if there are very serious restrictions placed upon the way the press can cover this inside the chamber.
And that's not even the press can cover it, what you're describing. That's how the live telecast of the proceedings can be transmitted. And so it seems to me, from what you just said, that that's another form of cover-up. Not letting people see... get the full dramatic impact of whatever's being said that we would get from any other televised event.
Yes, yes. I thought the camera would be the 101st, juror. In effect, it would be there. I just think it's like, what age are we living in when something this dramatic and so important to our national future, that we in effect only have a guarded view of it.
And of course, the 101st juror, meaning the public,
yes,
is everything, because
yes,
it would take a pretty big public shift in these
exactly
states with Republican senators to actually convict the president. Let me take a step back and ask you a big picture question, kind of along
sure
these lines. You were there for the Nixon impeachment inquiry and the Clinton, and now as an observer of the Trump. How would you compare the partisanship on either side as opposed to sober seriousness of purpose?
Oh, we've just moved into a new age where hyper-partisanship is infected everything. And as Doris Kearns Goodwin, the historian, argues, we haven't been this divided as a people since the 1850s, and we all know where that led. What I came away from the Nixon impeachment effort and the whole the drama, the controversy, the shame that went with that, I was in the White House during that time. Bob Woodward, we went to school together. We weren't friends there very much, but we knew each other and we talked. And we talked periodically as these investigations opened up. I was sort of one of the conduits he had, officially recognized by the president, to talk to him. And there was a sense then that the pillars of the government might be coming down in the Nixon controversy, that we were in the midst of a huge crisis, and that it was going to be a test of our checks and balances, and both formal and informal. And I must say, not only did the checks and balances work better than anybody expected, the judicial branch, you know, Judge Sirica was fair. The investigations undertaken by the FBI and the CIA, to the extent they weren't being manipulated, they were tried to be fair. The press and Woodward and Bernstein and Ben Bradley and Kay Graham, they inside the White House, I was being told, oh, they're lying. They're just trying to bring down the president. They hate him. They're liberals, and they've got a conservative president, and he hasn't done anything wrong. And then, it turned out all the lying was done inside the White House. But what really impressed me in those days was that each side, and especially in this case, the Republicans who had their man in the White House, the Republicans were among the first to turn on Nixon. Howard Baker and Barry Goldwater and Hugh Scott from Pennsylvania, you know, they had a delegation that went down to see Nixon to say, you have to leave. You don't have the votes in the House or the Senate. Mm-hmm. This is a national tragedy. It's a national scandal. But we're here to tell you that you really do need to step down. And that was what pressed him and forced him to step down before we had a formal impeachment and a formal trial in the Senate. So I saw a lot of bipartisanship there. Remember, too, that how did we learn that there was a taping system in the White House? It came through questioning by Republicans of people in the White House. on the staff. And Fred Thompson from Tennessee was working for Howard Baker, a Republican senator from Tennessee. And Thompson's questioning really helped to open that lid. I didn't know, as a White House staff person, there were only like three or four people in the White House who knew we had a taping system. But once the taping system was recognized as existing, became very, very important evidence, just as some of these documents are now. Very important supporting evidence. And then it was all over. Everybody knew it was all over once the tapes came out.
How would you rate Trump's alleged high crimes in terms of seriousness of offense in this historical comparison? His defenders say the aid was held up only briefly. It was released. They never announced a Biden probe in Ukraine. No harm, so very little foul.
Well, I personally believe what we see rises to the level of impeachable offenses. I think it's a harder question whether it compels ouster from the presidency. I do think we have to be careful here. The high crimes and misdemeanors were high, but they weren't sky high. This was not something that threatened the operations of the government. It was wrong, and the president ought to be held accountable for where it's wrong. But ultimately, I think the most important evaluation of this is going to come from the voters in November of this next year. And ultimately, in a democracy, that should have great weight.
There's some more breaking news just these last few minutes, David, as we were just talking.
We could stay on here all day.
Yeah, that's right, the way things are going right now, right? So this is an Associated Press story. The headline is Watchdog, White House Violated Law in Freezing Ukraine Aid. And it says the federal government's watchdog agency, I'm not sure which agency that is, says a White House office violated federal law in withholding security assistance to Ukraine. The Government Accountability Office, that one, says the White House Office of Management and Budget violated the law in holding up the assistance, and gives us the context that the freeze is at the center of the impeachment of Donald Trump. Any reaction?
Well, I'm a little flabbergasted. This is what is called the 11th hour. Where have they been in trying to assess whether there were violations of the law? I'm not questioning their judgment. I'm just questioning the timing. It just seems odd. Whereas Parnas, he just turned over the documents. He just came through all the processes that encouraged him to turn over the documents, and so the government just got them. But the government has been sitting on this case of whether the law is violating and holding back aid, for a long time.
And it was another thread of information that came out since the House voted for impeachment in December in these ensuing few weeks, that there was more debate than we previously knew within the Office of Management and Budget and the Pentagon as to whether withholding the aid was legal.
Yes, I agree. And that to me is quite relevant, and it came out in a timely fashion.
I heard Eric Trump on Fox last night arguing that America is not paying much attention to the impeachment process because the president is having a great week on what the public really cares about, which is the economy. The new NAFTA, the USMCA, is passing Congress with Democratic support. All the senators in the Democrats' debate Tuesday night, except Bernie Sanders, are voting for it. And, they admitted that Trump improved NAFTA. Similarly, the trade deal with China was signed yesterday, opening up China to more U.S. exports, so at least a partial victory, and the stock market hit more record highs. They say one of the reasons that Clinton was not removed from office was because the economy was doing well at the time, so people really didn't care about his misdeeds. How much do you think that would apply today?
I think there's some truth to it. Listen, I've always felt that Richard Nixon was weakened in his case. He had to go when the documents came out, when the tapes came out. But nonetheless, the public was much more ready to see him go because he had a lousy economy. And that did play a role in the sort of the dynamics as they unfolded. And I do think that the strength that Donald Trump has is the perception that he does claim some credit for a strong economy. But, there are things in life that are more important than whether the GDP grows by an extra 0.3 or 0.4 or 0.5 versus the quality of our public life and whether we have civic virtue and we can talk to each other in respectful ways and whether we trust each other and whether, you know, that's what's going to make this, that's what holds this society together. It's not whether the economy has grown by 0.5% or 2% or 2.1%. It is rather the quality of our lives together and do we treat each other as human beings and with respect and civility and trying to work together. And we're being challenged on those fronts now. Democracies around the world are being challenged on those fronts now. This is the most serious threat to democracy we've seen in our lifetimes, the way that things are unfolding these days. And we do need leadership. And I think we need, you know, we need to look more and more to the younger generation, to people of color, to women, to veterans and others to come in and get involved in this arena, because this chapter on impeachment and the trial is only one chapter in our national story. There are others to come. And what's really, really important is for us to draw lessons from this process that honesty does count in the Oval Office. Honesty does count in the executive branch. And abuse of power is something which damages all of us. So I think this is... Yeah, I think this is a really important moment in our national story, and we ought to recognize it as such and not get too mired down in the Parnasses of the world. Mm. We've got bigger fish to fry, frankly.
Big picture wisdom from David Gergen, who was a White House advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton. He is founding director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard and senior political analyst for CNN. It's been my honor. Thank you so much.
Oh, listen, it's my privilege, Brian, and thank you. And thank you for all the work you've been doing over the years.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.